This is Bama Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Nat, or Natalie Bedard, an energy healing and empowerment coaching consultant. And so we'd like to welcome you to the Bama Electric Ghost podcast. And how are you doing tonight?
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here and have this conversation with you. And I'm doing really well. It was a really nice day, mild day today. So, you know, spring is starting to arise. So that just brings my energy up. So I'm very thankful. How are you?
Thank you and welcome again to well, I'm doing pretty well. We're doing our podcasting. We're actually an episode with this episode 1072 tracking on Apple Podcasts since 2016. And yeah, we've been around for a little bit. And we're still here. People say podcasters only last like 12 episodes, but I guess they didn't talk to us.
No.
So I want to, again, welcome you to the podcast and let everybody be aware that we have your link tree. You don't have to remember that because it will be fully clickable when we're published on all the platforms. Right now, we're live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. You will be able to click on that on those channels. So it's Linktree, Lift Oneself, and that will be fully clickable everywhere that we're published again. And one of the things that we were going to talk about today is how can I be true to myself? That's kind of the focus. But before we get to that, one thing we always ask everybody is what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
What motivates me and why do I do what I do? What motivates me is curiosity and curiosity of the life itself and the mysteries of life and the curiosity of having new experiences. What motivates me is knowing that if I have breath, whatever is, you know, giving me the energy in my breath has a purpose for me here. And so no matter the pain, the experiences that I have, there's a capacity for me to be in my experiences and to keep moving forward. Where, you know, some days I'm very strong at speaking this language and other days it's taking everything just for me to get out of my bed to still keep moving forward. And just allowing myself to surrender and be still in that experience. But great question.
Well, thank you. Well, we just want to kind of get an insight into your story. And that kind of goes to, you know, what we're going to talk about today. And one of the points I wanted to get into is like, what is your definition of self-care from your perspective?
Self-care is being able to take care of yourself as a whole. And so self-care means for me is being true to yourself and also having the discipline to go beyond what your wants are, to really support your needs. And a lot of us don't even know what we actually need. We don't realize that we have psychological needs, we have emotional needs, we have spiritual needs, we have physical needs, we have sexual needs, we have it to be, you know, human contact, we have creativity. We're very multidimensional human beings. And a lot of times we just think self-care is just about pampering. And it isn't. It's
like going to the spa. It's not spa day.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. It is good to disconnect and being able to take care of yourself. Yet if you're talking about a spa, my spas are doing cold plunges and going in very extreme heat temperatures.
Oh, wow.
So some people would be like, oh, I don't want that kind of spa. That's what a spa day is for me, going, doing the cold plunges, because I understand what it does for the chemical releases in your body. And I understand, you know, how it benefits you to rejuvenate in those extreme polarities. And I think, you know, a lot of times we aren't taking the time for self-care of journaling, of meditating, of exercising, of having, you know, honest conversations, having purges, watching our nutrition, watching, you know, traveling, or being able to just be in nature also. I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, But sometimes people are in such of a caretaker role, where they're taking care of everybody to the extent that they don't take care of themselves, because they're kind of like self-sacrificing. And then, like, you're not going to be in a good position if you don't take care of yourself. It's not selfish to take care of yourself, because you'll start to, you know, degrade in your the pillars of your body, your mind, your spirit, your body. And so if you don't listen to your body, you end up at the hospital. You don't listen to your heart and your spirit, your soul, you end up in the doldrums. And, you know, that could lead to bad results too. So there's a lot of aspects that sometimes people, you know, don't pay attention to. You might be in physically great condition, but your mental state is bad, right? You look in the mirror and you don't see what everybody else sees. Everybody else sees, oh, you're in really good shape, but you're in your mind, you're not. So it's sometimes like, understand that there's a like holistic nature, that there's a whole, like, you're not just one piece of the puzzle. You're like the whole thing.
Exactly. It's all about energy. And, you know, in this world, we put on a lot of masks, and some people have like layers and layers of masks that they present into the world, and they're not even able to connect into who they really are. And they have very few people, or maybe nobody, that they can really show who they really are to people. They have all these masks to be accepted by other people. And to touch back on that caretaking role, a lot of times when people are highly motivated to take care of other people, that indicates a trauma response. And so a lot of times they haven't been able to do that inner work to find out, what is it about me that feels the need to have to take care of everybody else? And I'm not even supplying that for myself.
Puts you in a bad position. I mean, I think because what happens eventually, you're going to get to a critical point. You're going to break down. You're going to kind of overload.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of times people overload, and they think of, like, you know, narcissistic type people overloading, or, you know, somebody that from a negative result. But sometimes, like, that seems like a positive thing, the caretaker, but that can have a negative result if you don't handle your needs.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of people, when you'll ask them, what are your needs? And they're like, I don't even know what that is. Like, I cannot even name it. And I'm like, you know, that's something, that's your work that you need to, and you're allowed to have needs. It's not about looking at everybody else's needs. And a lot of times caretakers are only supplying the wants of other people. It's not even the needs.
Yeah. So they kind of don't even, they're not even, you know, I think like your self-examination. So I'm a creative person. I've been like into poetry and the idea like the looking glass, you know, in like the old Victorian poets would talk about this looking glass self. And that kind of was like the root of all their creativity, is like diving into like what I'm doing here with this art is an examination of the self, of the soul, of the heart. I'm diving into it. And in that process, like you end up being vulnerable. Like I think a lot of creative people, what we tap into is we are able to be vulnerable and put it out in the public. And that's a thing that a lot of people are scared of, and they don't know how to do it, or they might not feel they have the right to do it, because they say, well, I don't have a right to be a poet because I'm not Shakespeare. And then, I'm not Oprah, or I'm not, you know, you don't have to be some big person to be a creative person. You can just express yourself.
Exactly. And I think that's what's missing with a lot of people. They think creativity or creative people is only for a certain select few, where each and every one of us is a creative person. We have different expressions of being creative. Because, you know, for me, somebody that does accounting and plays around with numbers, they have to be creative in that way. And I have no idea how that creativity is. Yet if you play with words, like, you know, poetry and writing stories, I can be very creative in those aspects, where somebody that does accounting could not understand it at all. I look at musicians and how they hear notes and music in their head, and I'll hear certain things, but not to the degree that they do. And it's like, everybody has their way of being creative. It's not just the way the world has given it a little box. That's one thing I work with my clients, is come back into play, come back into creativity, come back into play that has no structure. that you're able to just let your curiosity go out there and start creating things, that it doesn't have to look polished and refined and have perfection. Because when you were a child, it was messy. And that's what life is really is. It's messy.
Well, I think it's like that childlike fervor is what a lot of creative people kind of never lose. Okay, we're totally kind of told to grow up as a kid. And a lot of musicians I met, we've been kind of accused of not growing up. But it's kind of that childlike aspect is like, we never got rid of that spark that like I'm going to do this creative thing, whether or not it makes money or not. I just like to do it.
Exactly.
I don't really care. It's like I always felt like there's this muse, or I'm tapping into this universal key, or like I'm just, I'm in this present moment and I'm just stream of consciousness and we can channel it. And then your creative person is able to not like naysay it. Where a person who says they're not creative and they have these creative sparks, they immediately say, well, that can't be real. I can't go with that. They kind of suppress it. They're pushing it down. And it's there, but they just push it down. It's like eventually they find that you don't have to push that down.
Yeah.
But I think we're kind of trained to push it down. And creatives are like, well, I'm not pushing that down because it's like that. I like it.
And some of them get sick because of that suppression. Because it's energy that is trying to come out and you keep pushing it down. So then it starts to have a dis-ease. So you're having a disconnection with what really wants to come through you. And so a lot of times people get illnesses or breakdowns, and that's what helps them to do a surrender. They have to learn it in the hard way to really be authentic with themselves and connect back into what their essence and be that vessel of that creation and let that stream come through them.
I think I like to also talk about meditation, because a lot of times one of the first things a lot of artists do is get themselves to a place where they're either in a meditation or they can block out the noise.
Mm-hmm.
Where even if they're in a noisy place, they get to a place where they try to get rid of that noise and focus, whether you chant or breathing exercises, but the way to kind of clear out all these inputs. Because if we're getting so many inputs, like you kind of unplug. You don't necessarily have to physically unplug. Sometimes you just learn how to mentally unplug from that to give yourself the space to actually be able to receive this kind of muse idea, which I think is really like a lot of it's subconscious. A lot of the muse is really your subconscious ability just tapping in and willing to feel that wherever you do, whether you're the accountant or the artist or the actor or the painter, it doesn't matter. Like whatever you do, you could be a baker, you could be anything. But it's just that feel that you can connect.
Yeah. I learned meditation back in 2015. In 2013, I started becoming ill in December of 2013. And in March of 2014, I was told I was going to die. I had lesions in my cerebellum and brainstem, and I was hospitalized for almost 40 days and went through a barrage of tests. I felt like Frankenstein because some of them were very painful. And I was discharged without any kind of plan because they had no idea what was causing my illness. And fast forward to 2015, I learned transcendental meditation. So that was my portal in. And in there, that is where I was able to release. I see trauma as energy, and it's stuck energy that gets into your nervous system. And so I was able to release a lot of the energy that was stuck in my system. What I can give as a visual, if some people haven't done meditation, really understand what this flow is, it's that you're able to regulate your nervous system to a point that your nervous system doesn't feel that it has to search and keep you protected. So you're not looking, you're not relying to all your senses to keep you protected. You actually are allowing your senses to go out there and involve everything in. And you're turning off the part that always feels that it has to know everything, or that everything is very subjective for you. you go beyond and go into a deeper dimension of the oneness. That's why I call my company Lift Oneself, so that you can come into this oneness and just allow there to be a dimension of expansion and openness, and that your nervous system doesn't feel that it has to take care of your persona and yourself. If that can give people a little bit more of a visualization of, oh, this is what you mean about the mind not being so chattery and wanting to do things or grasp things. It's your nervous system and the senses that are you're disarming that protection part of keep myself safe and know everything that's going on.
So it also sounds like you're lessening that kind of fight or flight type of thing that happens, like, you know, because a lot of times in modern life, like the wolf at the door is not actually a wolf.
Yeah.
It could be a word. It could be a memory that gets triggered by a scene or you know, something that just, you know, triggers. That these triggers in modern life that feel like that wolf or saber-tooth tiger chasing you.
Exactly.
And your body goes and reacts, and then you can end up getting sick because it's actually, it's real. Like what your mind perceives and what your senses perceive and the vibes you feel, whether or not you feel that's real or not, your body reacts to it. Your heart reacts to it. Your soul reacts to it. And you get all this, you know, I'm a Buddhist. We kind of believe in positivity and negative energy and a law of attraction. So if you're receiving all this negativity, you're just going to compound that negativity. If you start to feel the positivity and not prejudge it to be negative all the time, you're going to have a more positive outlook, and you're going to bring positive events around you, and then things will start to align where you have disharmony could suddenly go to harmony, or dissonance could actually go to, you know, something that's melodic, because now you're getting in tune with like the universe.
Exactly. And, you know, our nervous system is anchored for negativity. It's anchored to look for what's wrong. And so if you've had impacts of a lot of being surrounded by people that are always criticizing or feeling the sense of not good enough, your brain starts to develop that everything is negative. I need to look at everything to correct it to make myself feel safe. And so when you have had a mindset that way, it takes work to allow yourself to receive the positivity, to allow yourself to be in a flow state of ease rather than trying to grasp in desperation and do things for yourself. Yet it takes a practice, and that's why we call it a practice, because there's no arrival thing that all of a sudden, you know, take a magic pill and it's all gone. It's like, no, you have to work at this. And that's why it's called a practice, to remind yourself, oh, if your nervous system gets dysregulated in fight or flight, it's going to look for the negativity. And it's like, whoa, 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 we're okay. Let's process whatever we're feeling. Let's name it. Yet let's not let these feelings be the driver of our mental state.
Yeah, the imposter syndrome, however that comes to be in yourself, is, you know, that's a truth that, you know, you believe. Well, you know, it's a belief that you think is the truth, but it's not the truth. Correct. And a lot of times there's like this tendency to be in a codependency with that, right? So you go find the people that reinforce that you're not good enough.
Exactly.
So you can't do it. Like, oh. So everybody you find reinforces that you can't do it, rather than actually finding people that would say you could do it, because then that would be, oh, that's different. That might be harder. That may be more scary than what you've been dealing with. Even though you're not in a good place, you're more comfortable with that kind of codependent, self-inflicted situation.
I'd rather stay with the certainty than go into the unknown. Because uncertainty and unknown feels like a threat. I'd rather stay where I feel certain, where it feels like home, not realizing home may have been somewhere where it's toxic and you need to move out and find a new place. But it takes work. And also, I just want to mention to people too, is that sometimes when people start to go into meditation and they get into a silence and a relaxation, they get jolted out of that because they were harmed when they were in stillness and peace and relaxation. So their body is a protector. Their nervous system is a protector that, oh, wait, when we were in this state at one point, we were harmed. We're not safe to be in this space.
Oh, yeah. And so that could keep you from using a tool that could help you because you had a bad experience and you just have that bad memory or that bad experience. It's like, what do they call that? Like, you know, if you went through like a significant trauma, you know, like a trauma event, that end up like reinforcing it. So then you can't use the tool that can help you because you feel
and
like
you
it's
have
hurting.
To walk through that. You have to be able to give language and express what the fear was, express what the emotion was, what the experience was, and how you interpreted that. And so there is a visceral feeling that you're going to have to go through in your body to it's the same thing as programming. You're going to have to program your body to tell it you are safe in this relaxation. What happened before isn't happening now, although it feels like you're apprehensive that something bad is going to happen to me. So just to give, you know, people that may be wondering, like, I can't sit still, like, I can't relax. Like, and it might be that you were harmed when you were young. And that's why that sensation, you're not able to sit in it for too long because your body feels like something bad is going to happen.
Yeah, so your defenses are up all the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times some people are kind of, they don't have a disbelief that you can like dive into yourself and do that self-discovery. They're always looking for some kind of external savior or tool that's going to come from the outside and magically change it. So you're going to go from 0 to 100. It's going to solve it like a magic pill. And, you know, Western society is full of all these magic pills and all these instant gratifications that's going to solve it. You know, we get these addictions because all that addiction solves it for a couple seconds or a half hour or whatever time it does, but it's temporary. It's never permanent and it's harmful and it's not really going to the root cause analysis. And that root cause is, again, probably scary because it's something you haven't done. You know, you're probably told like, just suck it up.
Yeah.
You know, don't, you know, a lot of people were told like, oh, you can't get into that.
Yeah.
You got to get beyond that.
Yeah. And it's no, you got to go through it. You have to go through it. There's no overcoming. There's no get over it. There's no run away from it or just don't think about it. It's like, no, you go through it and you integrate. You go through it and you integrate.
That's interesting. So maybe we can talk about like, how do you process grief? Because that sounds like what we're talking about. Like you, in order to process it, you've got to go into it. You've got to actually, like a writer that's writing in detail about some event, you've got to actually get to the root and actually dive into the details. And that might be hard to do because then you're facing the thing that you don't want to talk about.
Brutal. Some of it is brutal. Like there's no, oh, let's be unicorns and rainbows and this is so lovely and spiritual. Some spiritual stuff is very painful and you're going through fire. You're forging through, like there's a reason why they say the dark night of the soul. Like it is very intense and brutal. And grief is an emotion that, and it's an experience that you don't get over. It becomes a part of expanding your perception. And it's going to, you know, at times you'll have purged it all out. Everything's going great. And all of a sudden there's a knock at the door and it's like, I'm back. And you're like, I thought I got rid of you. Yet you have to allow it to come back in to see, okay, what are you here to show me or tell me? Or what am I feeling that I'm not even in tune with what my emotions are? Because a lot of us aren't even coming into our body to feel what our actual emotions are, not what the world is telling us to be, not what anybody else has said, not what other people are feeling. What are you actually feeling? And at times, it's not just one thing. It's going to be different emotions that some of it contradicts each other and there's a conflict. And it's like, well, how can I be feeling two things that are polar opposite at the same time. And it's like, you're multidimensional. You can feel two or three. It's and in both and more. It's not and or, it's and in both.
Yeah, things are more, not, a lot of people want to talk about black and white. You know, it's just this or that. And the thing about being a human being, there's a lot of gray areas. And we're always looking for, they're like, you know, we're not computers. Computers just know zero and one. That's what they know. Even though all this talk about AI, at the end of the day, all the computer knows is zero and one, and it adds up to something, right? And it's all logic.
Yeah.
And it might perceive, you might perceive it, it's thinking, but it's not thinking or feeling anything like the way we do.
Yeah.
And so the idea that you're going to be like that computer and you're only going to think black and white, yes and no, that's not what it is. Yeah. There's a lot of gray areas that can be contradictory.
Exactly.
And then people who want to live in systems that think this is the only way are going to have a problem when things are not, are multidimensional.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things in life are multidimensional, but you've been kind of told they're not.
Exactly. And you've been told not to trust your own experience. Many people cannot even say to themselves, you know, a lot of people are looking for somebody just to say, I believe you. I believe that you are experiencing what you're experiencing. And I'm not going to tell you anything different. Yet let me invite you into seeing something of expanding that perception. Not telling you, no, it should be something different. Like there's something like, give it the analogy of, I'm experiencing as red, but you're going to tell me it's supposed to be black. But I'm experiencing as red. And let a person be believed in their experience and what they're feeling. It may not make sense to you, but it's not supposed to make sense to you. It's their experience. Yeah. And I think a lot of people have not been seen in their own experience. So they don't feel like they fit in. They feel like there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, because perception, you know, is the reality to the individual. Right? Mm-hmm. And so what you perceive is not always with your eyes.
No.
It's like all the senses perceive, and you can sense vibrations. Like if you walk in the room and somebody is giving off a really bad vibe, they didn't even say anything. Now you technically could say, well, you know, they didn't say anything, right? Yeah. But they're giving off a vibe that's super negative or that's super positive, and you can feel it, right? And there are people who say, well, I don't know. I have to have the absolute scientific proof that that person said X. Well, they didn't, you know, they never said anything.
Yeah.
You can feel it. And if you don't trust people when they say it, it's like, well, then you're discounting what that person actually is experiencing.
Exactly. As I tell people, we're feeling bodies that think. And we have been told, you know, when we were children, we came into a room and we knew when our parents, there was something wrong. And we would say, what's going on? And, oh, nothing. Nothing's going on. You're seeing something wrong. And then later on, when you grew up, you come to find out you did see it right, the right way, yet the adults didn't give you the right or the maturity to allow you to see that, oh, my intuition and my energy field was reading the situations right, yet the adults just didn't know how to be honest with this stuff.
Yeah.
And so we disconnected from that.
It's just like, you know, it's like the, you know, if you deal with, you know, animals and other beings on the planet, you know, like, oh, are they sentient? Well, you know, being a Buddhist, like, believe everything's like sentient, right? But there's other people who believe, like, no, they have no feelings. So if you walk in a world, you know, that some people believe that all these other creatures have no feelings or have no sentience, the only human beings have sentience, then you kind of like, okay, well, that's very limited.
Yeah.
And that limitation sometimes goes deeper than just with human beings.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And it's a very limiting beliefs have a lot of power over what can happen.
Exactly. I think it's very sad when humans want to be the king of the castle and think that they are the dominant of everything and they have the intelligence of everything. You know, if once you can come into the dimension of oneness and feel the energy and see how everything is so connected, It's such a very empowering, beautiful, and humbling experience. And it's so much gratitude because you know you're a part of that. You look at any kind of animal, and if you really sit there and study and see the way it's curiosity, see when the fear is coming up, see when they enjoy something, how can you say that that's not feelings? Maybe not in that interpretation that you think it needs to be as a human, yet for that being, that's what how they are interpreting their feelings of being able to, you know, maneuver on this planet. But it's really, I think in certain societies, they are still very prehistoric of not being able to talk about emotional intelligence. And that's where that lacking part is, that they're going to, you know, we are only this, where it's like, well, you're saying this, yet you're not even willing to engage in the conversation of emotional intelligence and actually see the vulnerability and sensitivity of another being that has life, that has its own purpose on this earth, to make sure that us as a collective, we all can grow together. Because, you know, if we were to get rid of ants, the planet would crumble.
Yeah. Well, we've had disconnects because of our, you know, superiority and tunnel vision.
Yeah.
So we've made a lot of mistakes in the modern, like, industrial world, where we didn't think we needed certain species that, oh, we can just hunt them to death. We can just wipe them out. Then we found out, oh, it's in imbalance.
Yeah.
There's like, you guys don't, like, human beings, a lot of times, you know, maybe the indigenous people understood the balance, but somehow these other cultures have, like, lost connection to Gaia, to the planet, and have lost the understanding that, like, you probably shouldn't wipe out all these plants and all these animals, because there's an interconnectedness and we need them. Though you, just because it's not profitable doesn't mean that it's not needed. And so we've made some mistakes because of ideologies, you know, capitalism. And so different ideologies have decided, oh, this is valuable and this is not valuable.
Yeah.
And it's really to the point of, like, even the emotion intelligence, what does that make profit? Yeah. If that's not profitable, then I'm not going to get into that. But if I can't see a way to find, like, how it's going to benefit me at this moment, then I don't need it.
Yeah. And we're seeing the effects of this now. We're seeing it around the world, the effects of what this ideology of capitalism and profit, where there's such a disconnect of seeing humanity and seeing the needs of so many, and seeing where capitalism starts to distort the mind of needing power. And if you don't have this power, then you feel insignificant and you go into survival mode. And that's why there's these wars and fights and disconnection, because of this thought that we are so disconnected from Earth, not thinking we need Earth. And it's like, no, we're a part of it. Like, it's, we're not superior of this, and we're not able to recreate water and recreate air. Like, why are we searching for another planet? It's how can we make this planet be the best that it can be? How we work together?
The throwaway mentality, right?
Yeah.
So if you're in this earth, well, you know, we've kind of used up the earth, so we need another one.
Yeah.
So we're going to move to the moon, move to Mars, but we haven't gotten rid of our process. Like, if you go to Mars and you just say, what if there's actually indigenous life on Mars, but you decided you own Mars, as like the USSR or the US or some China, you own this section of Mars, but there's already beings there.
Yeah.
So you're going to go repeat colonialism on a planetary scale. You're going to go do that because you didn't actually learn anything, right? You still haven't learned from here. Like you need to probably get this planet back to balance before you go imbalance some other planet.
Exactly. It's, you know, history repeats itself if you don't learn from it.
Yeah, it's like, and it's a microcosm and a macrocosm thing. Like, if you are out of balance, if you're not in tune, if you're like you're just like a musician, we're always talking about like dissonance and disharmony and being out of tune. Well, it's kind of like, you can take that analogy. If I'm out of tune, then it's not going to sound good. It's not going to put together, the song's going to be all off.
Exactly.
It's not going to be in alignment, and you're going to say, well, that's not good. It doesn't please the ears. It doesn't. Is it something's wrong? Well, we're kind of living on this planet. A lot of us are like in that kind of out of tune state and don't even realize it because there's no self-assessment to determine that you're out of tune.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody's given you a mirror to be able to see yourself because, you're a Buddhist, so you understand the reflection that everywhere you're looking, you're seeing yourself. And it's being able to always polish that mirror to be willing to look at yourself, no matter what the image is showing you, so that you can have more and more clarity and see what the work is for yourself.
Well, you're never done. Like the thing is, some people will think they're done, or they think they finished because they went through this step program, or they went and they followed this influencer, or they did this, and they took this course, they got this certificate. Like my whole opinion with my grandpa, I said, well, you're not done till you're not here, and even then you're going to be that way at the next place, and you're going to
Exactly.
start all over again. So it's like you're
Exactly.
never really done.
No.
You're always growing or changing into the next form.
Exactly.
But some people want to think they're done. It's like, well, you're not really done. You always have work to do.
I think that's part of the brain and part of our structure of society, especially when it comes to school. We've been told, like, okay, after you're done this course, you're finished this part and you go to the next part, where there's this feeling of sense of arrival. And I think that's where, a lot of people hit midlife crisis and they're like, you guys promised me if I checked off the boxes that I'd arrive at this state and everything would be fine. And I haven't arrived there yet. And I followed everything you guys have been saying. I've been miserable. So what am I going to do now? And how am I going to take charge of this life that I have? And what am I going to do? So I think there's a lot of times the mind wants to feel this sense of arrival of perfection, that I have it all figured out and that there's nothing else that's going to feel messy. There's nothing else that somebody's going to come point a finger. There's nothing else that I'm going to see myself do something that I think I should know better, yet I go and do it on top of knowing better because you're human and you're going to make mistakes as much as you would like not to. I think there's a part of that brain that wants this arrival place, yet it's always to take that pedestal and smash it. Because if you think you're going to arrive at a state, when life hits you, it's going to hit you real hard because life is always impermanent and it's always moving. So what you thought you had all figured out, it's going to change again.
Yeah, I mean, life is like this imperfect, journey that, like, it's very much like a lot like jazz, and in jazz, like, there's this concept. There's no bad note. There's an opportunity, right? So if you hit a note that's not expected, that's not bad. It's an opportunity
You're
because
going there.
imperfection is kind of part of the motif in the mantra, like. Like versus like a classical piece is like that's set. It's a set, Chopin, Beethoven, it's like a set piece. You can interpret, but there's a set form to the movement. But in a jazz piece, you can have somewhat of a set form, but there's a section where it goes into like a dissonance, it goes into a little off time. It can change, it can evolve. And anytime you play it, evolves based on what the feeling is in that venue, what the crowd is doing, what the artists feel. And so they decide to actually express it in the moment, in the present state. And that's kind of like a happy accident. And we're kind of told, like, oh, we shouldn't have these happy accidents. We should strive for perfection. But what is perfection?
It's
It's not really the goal.
Like I tell some of my clients, I'm like, be brave today and color outside of the lines. Just color outside of the lines, just a little bit. Just let yourself color outside the lines and just be a little more creative and a little more messy in your life. Allow yourself to laugh at the foolishness also.
we have so many tools today. The young people get these things and they want to make everything perfect.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, it used to be like, well, you know, if you're writing on a page, well, you're gonna make mistakes. You're gonna cross out things. That's what it. But now on a computer, you can get, oh, I can just make it perfect.
Yeah.
And then the problem is like a lot of things are kind of happy accidents. There's a lot of art. A lot of art in multiple kinds of forms,
yeah,
that were not exactly intended. That the pieces, people say, well, he must have had this brilliant idea. A lot of times, like, no, it was a mistake. It was like I wasn't actually intending this, and then I decided, oh, this is actually better than what I intended.
Exactly.
And people, if you just go with your intention, sometimes it'll fall flat. You have to kind of be open to that kind of. What the
surrender.
Wild power of the muse.
The muse and surrender into something to be that vessel and let it flow through you. Yet a lot of people don't know how to let go of that, like to really surrender. I think a lot of people don't even know really what the true definition of faith is. They believe if I just do the dogma of following what I've been told, then that is what my faith is. It's like, well, faith is a much more deeper part, and you really have to face fear in faith. You have to walk through it and be in the uncertainty and the unknown and trust. Trust in what you can't see. Trust in to believe that you have the capacity to experience whatever you're going to have to experience.
But yeah, that, like the faith, yeah, I mean, the faith to deal with the adversity and not know immediately mm-hmm. what the answer is. But like you said, to kind of live in it, through it, around it, embrace it, and not try to, you know, go around it or jump over it, but to kind of go through it. And I think a lot of times we try to find a shortcut.
Yeah.
And we're trying to find a way to avoid it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, that you're going to end up hitting it again if you don't go through it.
Yeah. I've hit many walls in my journey, and I know I'm still going to hit some walls because my ego is pretty strong at times, yet there's a lot of it that has softened, and there's such a joy to see when, you know, the spiraling of life, that when something comes back, it's like I'm at a different level and I'm seeing it from a different perspective. It's still there, yet it's not where I was at one time, and I have a different view with it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, life is always spiraling, that you come back and see certain patterns or see certain, feel certain experiences, and you're in a different view and you can appreciate it with a different perspective and a different, you know, knowledge and wisdom because of how you've experienced life. And sometimes you see where it's like, oh, I haven't changed much. Yet there's real beauty when you can say, oh, I've changed so much, that there's so much patience now. And I'm not so rattled or startled by certain things. And I can actually let out a laugh and not be so serious and rigid about it.
Yeah, I mean, life is just, you know, it's the ups and downs. It's like a wave.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and some people want to be on like upward wave all the time. And it's always in a growth mode. But, you know, life is such that sometimes you get hit with a wrinkle.
Yep.
And it dips a little bit, and it's like you didn't fail. That's just the way life is,
yeah.
Right? And you have to experience these moments where you're not exactly where you want to be. But if you identify like, oh, I'm in this, and you don't let it take you all the way down, you like you learn. It's a lesson learned. Like when you learn that like you're in a job, you don't fit there,
mm-hmm.
You know. And it's like, is that a failure? Is that a learning experience? When you discover like, this type of boss and me, they don't work. It doesn't work. This type of organization and me, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to fit, but it doesn't work. I need to go somewhere where it's actually going to be more aligned with what I want to do and where I'm going to be appreciated. So you could try to force that. And it's like a codependency. Mm-hmm. Like if you force something that's really not working,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's like sometimes you have to realize like you do have to shift. And it's hard to shift sometimes because that's like the unknown.
Yeah. It's also asking yourself, when there are places where it's uncomfortable and it's not working, it's also asking the question, what am I to learn in this situation? And at times it's to learn, like, this isn't your people, this isn't your space, so please stop coming back into this. Recognize that this isn't where you're supposed to be. And then there's other times where you learn about seeing certain characteristics of people that you didn't think you had, but you do. You have it, but it just is in a flip way. So you get to learn a little bit more of how we're like really 6 degrees of separation. So, and also having empathy for people, you know, really seeing that, you know, people are all going through this world and in their own perception, in their own heads, and allowing yourself to see, like, what am I to learn about this? And am I actually learning the value of who I am? And not just wanting to push everybody away, because there's no, you know, utopia of a perfect place where everybody's getting along. That's just not how life is. There's like, there has to be contrast. It's just the way it is. There's life and death. There's the in-between. And I understand that a lot of people would love utopia and everybody being kumbaya, getting along. That's just not how life is going to be. Like, that's just, it just doesn't exist, because life wouldn't be able to grow in that. Yet I think a question needs to be asked at times when things are going difficult, of asking internally, what am I supposed to learn? What am I supposed to see in this? And, you know, surrendering and listening to that voice inside, listening to that connection inside, to hear that guidance of what is there that I could learn, or I have to come out.
Yeah, I mean, there are some situations where, like, you know, it could be a point in time in your life where you don't fit because you have something you need to learn or learn how to do.
Yeah.
And then later in life, you could go back to that place where you've kind of grown and now you fit.
Yeah.
And I've been in situations where I've been, like, from a business standpoint, I had to go and do some things where I was outside of that world, gained some expertise, and was able to come back into that same environment and then thrive. Because I had to find what I was missing and be honest about, like, what I didn't have, and now I have it, and now I can do it. So sometimes you can actually go back after you find that you need to be kind of in the same frequency or in the right point in life, because sometimes you're in different time points.
Exactly.
This could be with people. There could be people that you knew at one point, it's like it works, and then it doesn't work, or, you know, now it works, and it changes. Like you said, things evolve.
It does. And a mantra that I use for myself to really go through the way. Say it again. Can you hear me?
Your mic kind of cut out. I don't know what happened.
Can you hear me? No? Can you hear me? Strange.
It was working. Now I lost you.
Am I here? No. Stop, Mike. Can you hear me? Did that work? No?
Somehow we lost your mic. I'm not sure what happened. Let me see.
No? Hi. Strange.
That's not happened before, so I'm not sure what's going on.
Very strange. Jumping a lot.
Okay, I'm going to try to come out and come back in.
Okay. Hi. Can you hear me?
I just rebooted.
Can you hear me?
Keep on talking. Yeah, I got you back.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know. It just dropped out.
The joys of technology.
Like the internet decided to like just drop, and I'm like, why?
Yeah, why now?
Yeah, we were having a good conversation. It is like, okay, great.
Well, that's yeah.
Like live for you, but we can go back to where your point you were making before it dropped off.
Yeah, like I said, there's a mantra I use for the waves of life. And a lot of times we use this too shall pass when we're going through difficulty. Yet when you're in a high state, you're to tell yourself this too shall pass because you're going to go back down in the dips. And so to remind yourself of the ebb and flow of life so that a lot of times we use prayer or we use certain mantras to get us through difficulty. And rather than also using it for when we're in high states to remind ourselves, we won't always be at this high state. We're going to go through the learning curves and the experiences.
Which yeah, I think that's an important lesson there, because sometimes we only do things when something bad happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes you have to be, you know, have mindful and have some practices for like everyday practice.
Yeah,
that is consistent with like the kind of consistency of your mindset.
Yeah, it's challenging. Yet once you can access these tools, it helps with your mental state and helps you to surf. And when you take water in and you go under the waves, that you can remind yourself, okay, I got the swimming techniques to come back for the air. And you know, ride the waves and stuff, because you're not always going to be able to be on your surfboard and surf. You're going to crash into the waves and take some hits and everything else, because that's just the way it is in navigating in life. People are going to die, things are going to be lost, things are going to be destroyed, and you're going to feel that in your human experience. There's no protecting yourself from that.
So from your experience, are there some key lessons that you've learned that you can maybe take away from your work that you maybe could describe here, like three key lessons learned that the audience could kind of understand?
Yeah. One, my number one key lesson is always coming to your breath. Focus on your breath. I know you'll hear people say breathe. And yes, we hold our breath when we have apprehension. Yet it's to even go deeper to bring your awareness to your breath so you can understand what's going on internally and you can give some verbiage and some words to what the overwhelm or what you're experiencing and everything else. But coming back to your breath constantly. I know, like, I practice Vipassana meditation, so just focusing on my breath and bringing me down into a deep dive. Yet I always constantly throughout the day come back into my breath to be in the now, to check what I'm going through and to do check-ins with myself. Second takeaway I would say is to journal, and to journal with honesty. Journal not just gratitude, also journal all the muck. You have to process your shit, excuse my language. No garden is going to be vibrant without the manure. So you need to process what you are experiencing, what has been going on, that you may not be able to, you know, communicate it to another person, yet you have to at least be honest with yourself and not try to hide and be this spiritual, perfect, pleasant person. You're a human. You're allowed to have whatever you're experiencing. It's okay. So to journal it out so that it's coming out of your head. and coming out of your system. And then my other practice would be to dance. Dance and let yourself have expression. Let yourself have movement in your life. Let yourself feel some joy. Dancing can allow us to process grief, to process joy, to process anger, to process an array of our emotions. So it's breath, journaling, and dancing. Those are three significant tools. If you can have those practices in your life, it will shift so much in your life and you will see changes.
I think that's really important, those three points, especially the one about, you know, not being scared to have your vulnerability or your shit, as you said. Sometimes it's like, a lot of times as an artist, like, we're scared to show that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because that stuff is really what makes the work. A lot of times as an artist, like, the things that you're scared for the audience to see, sometimes some artists are willing to actually show that. And when you actually show that, sometimes you get, you're like, well, I thought that was terrible. And it's actually relevant to the people, because it's like, wow, you're willing to go there. Like, if you're willing to show that level of vulnerability or the level of honesty in that, or authenticity.
Mm-hmm. And it's relatable. People want to relate. They want to be able to see that, oh, I can relate with you. I can see my experience in you. And you're not somewhere out in the distance or on a pedestal that I can relate to you. I can see myself in what you are expressing. So like you said, the vulnerability, the authenticity, it's that being relatable so that we can have a relation in this connection.
Yeah, because the whole idea of just putting a gloss on it with the hyper mask isn't always, you know, it's why, you know, I think in music, when you had the punk movement and the grunge movement, was kind of like, oh, that's without the band-aid on. It's like, yeah, you showed it, like, honesty and not being perfect, right? That type of music that has the kind of ramshackle aspect, even like a guy like Neil Young, when he decided to go with a band like Crazy Horse, he decided, I'm going to actually not be in perfect pitch, and I can be in perfect pitch. I can sing in Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I can do that perfect pitch, but I decided not to.
Yeah.
I decided to be more vulnerable, have a shaky voice, and put it on record to represent a feeling. Like, he was mourning some people. He had some songs that were very honest. And sometimes when you're willing to put that kind of raw nerve into your work, you put that out, whether you're a painter, photographer, artist, you know, actor, method acting, when you kind of put that raw nerve on film and you're like, wow, what is that? And it's like, it's because it feels like, because it's real.
Yeah. It's exactly. like you're saying about punk, I went down, because I live in Canada, I took my children out to the Poconos in January. And when we were driving back, I was listening to some Pink Floyd, and they were like, whoa. I was like, they were like, these lyrics. And I'm like, this was back in the 70s. So they were before their time, but they were very expressive about systems and things that were going on. And they just put it out there and they created like a revolution. Yet listening to that, like, it's so telltale to right now what's going on. Yet to see like how things have just, it's like it's stood in time.
Yeah.
So it's like artists like that can be vulnerable, to that can almost feel like it's an assassination of their character, that I'm going to put this out there, yet I could be assassinated and feel rejected. Yet it's what's needed. It's what the people need to give them the courage to be able to stand up and live life in a very authentic way.
Yeah, because when you're an artist and you're willing to not just put the gloss on it and then have the perfect pitch, perfect, you know, if you think about like, you know, the great singer era in music.
Yeah.
Where you had the Sinatras and you had the Nat King Coles, and that's great. And they had these great voices, but they really sometimes didn't really tell the kind of authentic stories that we got out of the 60s singer-songwriters and the 1970s singer-songwriters that started to like uncover not just a song about losing your romantic love, but actually diving into things that are like social issues.
Exactly.
They're talking about things, the environment, talking about all kinds of things like controversies or concepts that were beyond just like a jingle.
Yeah.
So that became something that, oh, you can do that. You can actually write about something that's not, you know, perfect.
Exactly.
or what you're supposed to write about. You're supposed to talk about love songs. You're just supposed to be an entertainer.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to talk about the real world. He's like, don't talk about the real world.
Don't disrupt anything. Don't be a disruptor. We don't want any disrupting. And it's like, no, we need some disruptions, please.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need to be like authentic you.
Yeah.
And authentic you sometimes is not going to get accolades immediately.
Yeah.
You know, usually you're on the bleeding edge, cutting edge of something when you do that, because like everybody else hasn't done it.
Yeah.
And so then they'll say, well, that's not what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, you know, like if you go to do something that's not part of the formula, it's not in the box, people are going to immediately say, hey, that wasn't in the box.
Yeah,
it wasn't supposed to be in the box.
Exactly.
You know, so I think that's a hard thing to do, because everybody wants to, you know, get along.
Exactly.
But you know, sometimes you don't do that.
And it's part of our survival mechanisms. You want to be a part of the tribe. So psychologically, if you feel like you're going to be ostracized and outside of the tribe, you feel like you're going to die. So there is a physiological, you know, thing that goes on in our nervous system whenever we feel that we're going to be, you know, ostracized out of the tribe. So that's where, if you can go through the fear and just be true to yourself and have that trust and faith, there's magic that happens.
Yeah, it's just the magic that I love when I talk to people like yourself. It's like having a live discussion where we can actually dive into an issue about like Lift Oneself, which is your website.
Yeah.
But the idea of it, it's a concept. It's like your concept. And we've been talking about ways to, you know, think in you know, out of the box in terms of that type of mindset. And I appreciate you being a guest on the Family Electric Ghost podcast. It always goes by quicker than we ever think. And we do recommend that people check out the links that we provide. Like, people click on your link, what will they find?
They're going to find a free 15-minute discovery call. So if they want to be a client with me, we can chat for 15 minutes to see if we can work together. They can find my website, where we will give more explanation of my story and the services that I offer. They'll find a link to my podcast, because I have a podcast called Lift Oneself. And I also, on social media, I'm always leaving motivational clips or tools. So that's my, you know, free information that's out in the world. And I want to leave a different imprint on social media, where there's a lot of negativity or violence or you know, just gossip, where I just want to leave a print where people can take a moment and do some self-reflection and, you know, have the empowerment that they don't feel alone in their journey of, you know, we're all walking each other home, and we forget that at times.
That's very important. I do appreciate what you're doing there. I want to thank you again for being a guest on the Family Electric Ghost podcast. We've been live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch, and we'll be on all the major podcast platforms that you're familiar with by tomorrow. And again, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor. Remember to be kind to yourself.
Thank you.